This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yak! Yo, welcome to a Monday edition of the Orange Bloods Podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, as always. There's no super game review this weekend. I'm still a few... two weeks away from Texas and Georgia doing battle in the Sugar Bowl in a game that I'm looking forward to from a curiosity standpoint more than anything else. Lots of recruiting discussion, though, today as we sit here 2 days away from National Signing Day. It's still so weird to have this early signing period. It makes the whole damn thing really just different in doing it in December. So a lot of recruiting talk today here on the podcast. Before I do anything else, I want to say thanks to our title sponsor, the Texas Card House over at 183 in Anderson Mill, the state of Texas's premier poker club, if you will. They are in the midst of a ton of different end of the year promotions and tournaments and things like that. Go check out the website, texascardhouse.com, or better yet, dude, go over there, drive up, walk in, ask for the management, tell them I sent you, tell them you're an Orange Blood, and to give you the tour, to give you the lowdown. It really is, just a marvelous place to play cards. TVs everywhere if you want to get your sports fix in while you're playing cards. I tend to be a guy that likes to focus on the cards while I'm there, but the massages and the food and everything else that's involved really is top shelf stuff. And we do love the fact that the guys over at Texas Card House, except for Justin, who's a bit of an LSU guy, and we can't hate him for that. We love our Orange Blood sponsorship, and we love the fact that they've jumped on board here over at the Yak to support this endeavor that we're doing. Very similar startup type ideas, trying to kind of change conceptually what people think is possible, both in the world of playing cards and in the world of podcasts. All right, so let's jump into this thing, right? We're 48, as I record this, we're less than 48 hours away from almost certainly most of the big names. Well, the guys that Texas has committed will put pen to paper. Those, almost everybody will be done 48 hours from the moment that I record this. As it stands with the big guys, we'll be waiting on some decisions, but I kind of wanted to run through the big names. I wrote about some of this over my 10 thoughts from the weekend. As Texas gets ready to close, and I'm going to jump into some specific players, and then we'll get into some big picture stuff. And then I've got some NFL rants and things like that I'm going to get into. In discussing the names that Texas is trying to finish with, I don't know how much of a set of fireworks we're going to see down the stretch here. I'm not convinced that Texas is going to finish with a flurry, but that doesn't automatically mean that this class loses luster because of it. I don't know that gaining another player or two completely changes what I think about this class. And I don't know that not getting the Longhorns have themselves a really good class. It kind of reminds me of a lot of the Mack Brown years at the end. And it's weird how it's kind of broken down this way, because I don't think there's a real correlation between the two. But if you'll remember, Mack Brown used to always think to himself that the guys that wanted to take the recruiting process to the end, he just was never confident that Texas would get those guys. I don't think Tom Herman feels that way. It just turns out the way that the recruiting board has worked out, I think a lot of guys, if they're going to finish with as bridesmaids with, will end up being the guys that decide at the end. It's just, it's a bit of a strange year, and I don't know that there are a ton of long-lasting trends that we should think exist that we should take from it, but we'll all have our eyes peeled on 2020. Let's run through the names. Trey Sanders, running back, IMG, a guy that Texas fans have been feeling quietly a little more confident about their positioning with him. You know, there's been the talk that Alabama believes they're going to get Trey Sanders. most of the people in this industry that have picked a dog in this fight have picked Alabama. There's Georgia talk this past weekend. He goes to Florida. I think the Gators may have made. You can never read too much into what kids are doing on Twitter and how they're hyping up the official visits that they're on. And I think fans want to believe that every time they post images from Texas, or I just don't know that it matters. You know, these kids go onto social media, and the whole point of tweeting out the photos of them on their official visits and things like that is to get retweets, to get likes, and to add more followers. So you just have to know that. You just have to know that posting an image with a smile on it, they don't view recruiting like fans do. Fans take it so seriously. And, you know, they if a kid was ever going to go to Texas, why in the hell would he go to Norman and put on an Oklahoma uniform? It must mean that he doesn't really like Texas, because if he did, no son of a bitch would ever put on that. No, he's a teenager. He wants retweets and more followers. And these kids will do anything in 2018 to make those two things happen. And yet, I'm giving you this kind of this rule in life to live by, and I'm going to break it. Basically, in the same sentence, I thought Trey Sanders and his family seemed to really like Florida based on the words they chose to use on social media, the vibe that was given out. And at the end of the day, I wrote about this over at Orange Bloods, but he's visited Alabama, Georgia, and Florida since he last visited Texas. And I think that kid really likes Texas, but I think those that cheer for and cover, so fans and media alike, that cover Alabama, Georgia, and Florida, I think they would be shocked. Like, I don't think any of those schools are sitting around thinking to themselves, watch out for Texas. Not with Trey Sanders. And that's not to say that Texas might not finish second or third in that. Again, I think Texas is going to be a very formidable bridesmaid with a lot of these kids and a lot of these situations. But look, man, this is what recruiting out of state looks like. You go into the state of Florida, you're going into IMG, you're competing against the entire country for the best players in the country. And it's tough, man. And I think Alabama looks at Georgia and says, that's our competition. And I think Georgia's looking at Alabama and saying, that's our competition. And I think both of those two schools are looking at Florida and saying, what's going on there? I don't think any of those schools think that Texas ultimately is the school that they need to deal with the most. That's a long way of me saying, I don't think Texas is going to get Trey Sanders. I think that that would be a really big shock on the national level. And of all of the players that Texas still has on the recruiting board, Trey Sanders, for me, is the guy that would change my opinion of this class. When you look at what it would mean to get a commitment from a kid like that, I mean, there's a better than 50% chance that that kid ends up being an NFL football player. The odds are on his side to end up drafted in the NFL over all of the other things that could happen. Injuries, grades, arrests. He's just not very good. Homesickness. Bad situations. There's so many things that can sidetrack a guy from ever fulfilling his optimal upside. But a kid at that level of recruit, which Texas doesn't have anybody in this class that's, I think, that guy. I think a year ago they had a couple. And I think that it shouldn't shock anybody that who was the Big 12 freshman of the year? Caden Stearns. He was the highest ranked, number one rated prospect in the state of Texas, number one player in the Texas recruiting class, 5 stars. That's what you get with 5 stars. That's why they're so important. Trey Sanders, I think, is number 2 in the Rivals 100? He'd be one of the highest ranked recruits that the University of Texas has ever landed. And from a running back standpoint, oh God. Texas has landed some 5-star running backs. Cedric Benson, Jamaal Charles wasn't even a five-star running back. I had him ranked as five stars, but Rivals didn't. Ricky Williams wasn't a five-star running back. Malcolm Brown was a five-star running back. Jonathan Gray was a five-star running back. One of those guys ended up being an NFL football player, and the other guy ended up being a little too injured and maybe a little too overrated. But history shows, man, the guys like Trey Sanders are worth their weight in gold. But I don't think Texas is going to get him. What's interesting about Trey Sanders is that for so long, he's had his name mentioned with a guy like Noah Kane. And I don't think those two guys are the same thing. I think that Trey Sanders is on a completely different level than Noah Kane. And Noah Kane is probably the guy that certainly is, you know, he's just had his name mentioned with Texas for so long. And for a long time, I thought Texas was going to get Noah Kane. It just made sense. It felt like he was a perfect fit with Texas. And it felt like that Texas had kind of laid the framework for him to be the guy. I have thought that one of the reasons why the Longhorns gave fewer carries to Keontae Ingram during the season at the, you know, you can say, well, they just, Trey Watson was their starter and that they valued that senior leadership and all, and Keontae Ingram was hurt and Keontae Ingram was a guy they feel like needed to lift some weights and get stronger. For most of the season, Keontae Ingram averaged 6 yards per carry. It really wasn't until the very end that thing fell down to about 5 yards per carry. The coaches aren't stupid. And say what you want to about Tom Herman, he can count. He can count that for most of the season, one of his running backs averaged more than 2 yards per carry more than the other guy. Well, give me all that senior stuff. I have believed that the coaches have somewhat slow played the Keontae Ingram role in that Texas offense. Because I remember when Cedric Benson had his freshman season at Texas back in 2001? Yes. And, you know, he got off to a slow start, but by the end, he was a 1,000-yard running back. By the end, had he and Mike Williams not run into each other in the Big 12 championship game, it's really possible that Texas would have played in the national championship that year. That weird-ass play where Cedric Benson and Mike Williams ran into each other, you know, I've always thought that that's one of the more underrated, terrible plays in the history of the Texas program. I digress. That year, Texas was recruiting Selvin Young, who was a national top 100, kind of on the Noah Kane level of recruits. He wasn't Trey Sanders, but he was probably Noah Kane. Definitely the best running back in the state of Texas that year. And Oklahoma pointed to Cedric Benson to say, why would you go to Texas and play behind that dude? Like, that dude just won Big 12 Freshman of the Year. That dude has a couple of more years at a minimum of starting. So Oklahoma coaches just would plead to Selvin Young, why would you go to Texas? We have a need right now. Right now you can start. If you go to Texas, you've got Cedric Benson there. And it didn't work. Ultimately, Texas got Selvin Young, which, this is a long time ago, but about 17 years ago, it caused Mike Stoops to lose his shit on a radio interview. I think it was in Dallas, but it might have been in with the Sports Animal in Oklahoma City, where he basically was like, I don't understand all of this. And Mike, all these years later, man, I feel you. What Mack Brown did, especially at that time, from 1999 to 2002, you know, nobody has ever seen that here in the state of Texas in its history. We can argue whether, and I've done this a little bit on Orange Bloods today, because I think Mack Brown is the greatest recruiter in the history of college football. Now, there are people who are pointing to what Nick Saban has done at Alabama and say, well, look, man, look at all the number one classes that he's had. Look at all the championships that they've won. And I'm not going to argue somebody that points to that and says Nick Saban is the best. It's just different. What Mack did back in the day is just different than what Saban's done. It's apples versus oranges. And I don't want to go too deep down that rabbit hole. I might do that a little bit later. But to circle back around, I think because Texas has wanted Noah Kane for so long, I think this has been a two-year Tom Herman odyssey, crusade, if you will, to find a way to get Noah Kane. I think they held back Keyonte Ingram a little bit in the name of a lot of different excuses. But I think it was, you know, Keyonte Ingram as a freshman running back with 1,000 yards might scare off somebody who wants to play right away, who sees himself hopefully as a day one starter. I think Noah Kane thinks of himself that way. I don't know that I think of Noah Kane that way. If Noah Kane were to come to Texas, I think Noah Kane is a guy that probably is splitting carries, a lot of carries next year with Keyonte Ingram, knowing that there's another running back in the state of Texas who presides at Galena Park North Shore that is probably better than all of these dudes. But I think they have done everything they can to get Noah Kane. I think they tried to spell it out for him. I just don't think Noah Kane feels Texas. I'm reminded of when Jarvis Moss was a recruit back in the day at Denton Ryan. It's like class of 2004, class of 2003, I think. I've lost track. I think it was class of 2003, that same year that Tim Crowder came out. And it just seemed like it was very similar to the Noah Kane recruitment in that there wasn't an obvious other school. Although with Noah Kane, it does seem like Penn State has stepped into the other school territory. But let's forget about that for a second, because Noah Kane, Penn State wasn't the threat that Penn State is now for the last 24 months. That's a fairly new development. And just like, you know, for those that have forgotten the Jarvis Moss recruitment, because, you know, it was 15 years ago, this kid that ultimately ended up being a first-round draft pick in the NFL in a year when Texas had to have defensive ends. I mean, Jarvis Moss could have come into Texas and competed for a starting spot immediately. That's how bad the need was. But even though everybody kept thinking it's a perfect fit, it looked good on paper, I don't think Jarvis Moss ever looked at paper. And then on his last visit, he went to Florida and just kind of fell in love with the place. Almost, in my opinion, as much because it wasn't Texas. And he finally had that feeling. I wonder if Noah Kane looks at Texas and he just sees that nice girl that should be his girlfriend. I think about this, you know, 20 plus years removed from high school. If I had it to do all over again, I wouldn't have worried about trying to find whatever the hell it was I was looking for. Because there were incredible girls in high school that were into me that I just wasn't into because for whatever reason. And I think that's how Noah Kane looks at Texas. It's like, oh, you know, home state, Texas, Herman loves me, running back depth chart, program on the rise, great education. Like, you can roll all the things out, and he's looking at it like, yeah, but that's not who I want to go out with. And I think Noah Kane has been a guy that's been, I don't think he's known the girl or boy that he's looking for. And I think going to Penn State changed that in his recruitment in a way that it did for Jarvis Moss all those years ago. Like, he just took this random visit and was like, yeah, no, I finally feel that fire that you're supposed to feel. I feel like Noah Kane has been placating Texas and probably to a bit of a detriment to himself. Because if he were going to be a Longhorn, I feel like Noah Kane could have already have been a Longhorn and really helped out with this class. Helped out with other kids that Texas has been targeting from that area. Been a guy that could be the true centerpiece, the name on this class, with all due respect to Jordan Whittington. And I just don't feel like Noah Kane feels that way. And when you look at what people who have their finger on the pulse of the Noah Kane recruitment think, they're not thinking Texas. I read an article today over at Rivals.com, where Mike Farrell and Jason Sukumel were talking about this. And Sukumel didn't pick Texas. And Mike Farrell flat out was like, nah, I think it's Penn State. So, you know, I kind of think that, that's where that stands. And the Longhorns just aren't going to get that Class A running back that they've really coveted all year long in recruiting. And it does represent a bit of a disappointment, I think, in this class, that they've got a couple of good backs, but they don't have the level of difference maker at that position that they've coveted. And the margins of, well, they got a guy who's a Rivals 250 member, they just don't have a Rivals 100 member. I mean, that's in a lot, in most cases, that's the difference between getting a guy who's a 40 or 50% chance guy of being an NFL player versus getting a guy who's an 80% chance of not. The fine margin sometimes, there's a huge divide. Because on paper, well, there shouldn't be much difference between a Rivals 100 and a Rivals 200, 250 guy, and there is. There's all of the data historically shows. We're just guessing once you get past the top 75 or so, and not even that many. Now, I'm here to tell you, it's a pseudoscience. It's a pseudoscience. Because in the state of Texas, for instance, once you get past the top 12 to 15 players in the state, players 16 in the Lone Star recruiting rankings, the Rivals 100 rankings, the 24/7 composite rankings, prospect 16 and prospect 100 have less than 10 percentage points between them in terms of projections to the NFL. A high three-star guy and a low four-star guy or a mid four-star guy, it's slim. I have reached the point where there's just no reason for getting worked up over a kid that's a low four-star to high three-star type guy. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. Isaiah Hookfin is a guy that everybody thought is going to end up at Texas for a long, long time. Like, that was just a given. It's a given. Isaiah Hookfin, Longhorn. Write it in pen. Write it in ink. And suddenly we're 48 hours away from signing day, and he's not taking phone calls, even though he's been probably the most accessible recruit that Texas has been recruiting in terms of the media being able to get in touch with him. Jason Sukumel can vouch for that. And now you're hearing Baylor. Now you're hearing that, you know, Hookfin going off the grid, complete silence. Look, man. Whether Isaiah Hookfin ends up at Texas or whether Isaiah Hookfin ends up at Baylor, that kid's got between 15 to 20% chance of being a next level player. He's a project. And the funny little dirty secret of recruiting is that we will all argue there'll be Isaiah Hookfin. That's a top 25 kid in the state. No, he's top 50. Somewhere in between there. You've got him ranked too high. You've got him ranked too low. And the reality is, it doesn't matter. They're all the same, basically. There's just a small sliver of difference. There's a Grand Canyon of difference between the upside of the kids in the state of Texas in the top 15-ish, and that might even be too many, versus the long-term projections of all the kids that come afterwards. There's just no reason. The reason why you lose your shit a little bit is because Texas doesn't have a lot of bodies. The volume isn't quite there with the offensive line the way that you would like it. But if you're not recruiting difference makers, you know, there's just not a lot of difference between saying getting a kid who's a state top 50 kid versus a state top 150 kid. And this flies in the face of what has built my business, this idea that four stars matter. They do, but only, you know, only in terms of volume and only in terms of how many truly elite of the elite guys you get. So what's going to happen with Isaiah Hookfin? I don't know. If you held a gun to my head right now, I guess I would say Baylor. I wrote Texas last night. I don't know. I don't know. How could anybody know? The kid just went to a visit to Baylor. The kid's gone silent. Like, I can't mind read. And the Texas coaches don't know. So, you know, We'll see. Other kids, look, Kennedy Lewis is going to be a Longhorn. That kid's going to announce his commitment fairly soon. That's when the Longhorns are going to get the Brew McCoy recruitment. And I feel like there's a lot of people who will have listened to this podcast are going to be pissed that I waited 20-plus minutes into the podcast to get to Brew McCoy. Don't worry. Brew McCoy is going to get his time. You could make a case that Brew McCoy has a little bit of Jarvis Moss in him and that, you know, that's bad for USC. And that on paper, everything points to that kid going to USC. In fact, everybody in the state of California seems certain that he's going to go to USC. I, if you held a gun to my head, would pick him to go to USC, except the circumstances, and in a normal setting, that kid's probably already committed to USC. But we all know their coaching situation sucks. We all know that, look, on one hand, Cliff Kingsbury going to USC is a bit of a coup for the Trojans, unless they just don't like Cliff Kingsbury, unless, you know, he took a big old dump in their, I'm not going to do that. I apologize, Coach Wareheim, for referencing the deuce in the bathroom on a recruiting visit when it's been long established that that's just an urban myth, but it's still funny. But look, Brew McCoy, here's why I think USC finishes out at the end. Because, and this is where he's probably not Jarvis Moss. And maybe I should retire Jarvis Moss's name from this podcast. It would be funny if somebody walked over to Jarvis Moss at some point this week and was like, hey, I was listening to a podcast this week. Your name got mentioned a lot. Really? I haven't played in a long time. Why? And, you know, laid it all out. What's funny is oftentimes I remember these kids' recruitments better than they do. I'm convinced I remember Drew Brees' recruitment better than he does. I do. There's a couple of other kids that I probably feel that way about too, like Tommy Harris. I've got to get Tommy Harris on a podcast at some point and see how much he remembers about his recruitment and the things that he did and how it all played out. But that's for another story. Look, Brew McCoy did a 2.5-hour in-home visit, and a lot of times that can feel like desperation. You know, you wouldn't want to see a 45-minute visit if you're USC. You wouldn't want to be getting kicked out of the house. 2.5 hours feels like they felt like they had work to do. But then he goes and does the official visit this weekend on the back heels of that. And all of my experience in the industry suggests that that means USC is going to get that kid. But there's no question that he's got reasons to not want to go to USC. And I go back to Kingsbury. On one hand, he's a guy that people in the NFL are talking. There's a rumor out today from Bleacher Report. And look, you know, I don't mean to slam Bleacher Report. And it's possible. I didn't even see who reported it. So if it's a guy like Mike Freeman, then hey, it's probably aces. But, you know, I somewhat looked at that and went, well, I don't know what that means. But you do hear that NFL teams, because they're looking for the next Sean McVay, have an interest in Cliff Kingsbury. And there was a report out today that some NFL team might try to buy out Kingsbury from his contract to make him a head coach in the NFL. I am not a guy that thinks you pick a school off of an assistant coach. Ever. Ever. This just in. There's a good chance that Brew McCoy could come to Texas or USC, and the coaches that recruit him won't be here in 3 seasons. I mean, ask any kid in the Texas offense. They literally have had, we've seen kids who were recruited by Mac, coached by Charlie, finished up with Tom Herman, and had, 4 or 5 offensive coordinators in between. You don't make life decisions based off of that. So I think the Cliff Kingsbury stuff gets overplayed a little bit. I think it's probably more good than bad because he doesn't suck. I mean, he has developed some pretty badass quarterbacks. His offenses do produce tremendous wide receivers. I think USC probably gets Brew McCoy. I don't know that a lot of the discussion around his recruitment that Texas fans have been focused on, I don't know that they've been focused on the right things. I think that I look, when it comes to the skill positions, when it comes to what Texas recruited a year ago, when you look at what Texas has this year in the skill positions, I think there's probably a better chance that Brew McCoy can go to USC, skip to the front of the line, and get on the field first. I wonder about that with Texas. And I wonder how many kids, you know, Jalen Catalan is another guy that we can talk about here in a second. You know, I wonder, how could you not? How could you be a defensive back in the class of 2019 and not notice, man, B.J. Foster played a lot this year. Man, Caden Stearns, he's good. Man, Anthony Cook on the field. Man, that's three freshmen taking up three starting spots, and they're not going anywhere. So if you're Jalen Catalan, I'm not saying that's why you don't pick Texas. I'm saying that's why you might have reason for pause. And I do wonder if Brew McCoy, as good as he is, and generally five-star kids don't worry too much about depth charts, unless there's so many kids there that are young, that are badasses as recruits. And Texas has recruited the wide receiver to such an extent, I don't know that losing Brew McCoy, I'm a believer that you collect as many players like Brew McCoy as you can, because he's one of those kids that fits the profile of a better than 50-50 chance of being in the NFL. But there's no getting around the fact that if there are two positions, just in general, forget about the names for a second. Forget about the names. Forget about I'm even specifically talking about Brew McCoy. If there are two positions in the Texas program that a person shouldn't lose their shit over because they didn't get a kid, it's in the secondary and it's at wide receiver. And maybe even quarterback. Because the quarterback position has shaped up very nicely now that Sam Ellinger... You know, the Texas issue wasn't numbers. The Texas issue was somebody being fucking good. And Sam Ellinger is taking over that spot. And now you can it can allow your younger guys to look at the depth chart and go, okay, well, that guy's going to be a starter for one, two more seasons. My mindset is win the backup job, develop, and get myself ready for 2020, 2021. And the real problem is when you got a bunch of young guys competing for a job now and one of them wins the job, and whether they're good or not, the other guy departs. Quarterback, running back, offensive line, defensive line, linebacker, man, lose your shit when you miss at Texas right now a big-time guy. You know, I think not getting Trey Sanders is bigger than not getting Brew McCoy, even if Brew McCoy is probably much more realistic. The need is probably greater at running back than it is for wide receiver. Because even if Lil Jordan Humphrey and Colin Johnson both depart for the NFL, and I don't think that's going to happen, those two guys could both come back, along with Devin Duvernay, along with Brennan Eagles, along with Alvante Woodard, along with all of the guys, the Joshua Moores, right? Like, they've got receivers. They got Jake Smith coming in. They've got Jordan Whittington coming in. Like, they're good. They're good. I don't think anybody needs to lose any sleep over Brew McCoy potentially going to USC. The sting is that you don't get your hands in this class. Texas only has a couple of players as good as Brew McCoy. That is why you want to get Brew McCoy. But shh, the couple of players that Texas has in this class that are as good as Brew McCoy are wide receivers. Jordan Whittington and Jake Smith may be the two best players in this class. And that's on the heels of really good wide receiver recruiting a year ago. They're going to add Kennedy Lewis. Elijah Higgins is the really weird one here. We've got some good connections to Stanford over at Orange Bloods. And I think that we've thought, okay, it's going to be Stanford. But I think the Stanford side of this is a little more weary of Texas. And look, that might just be, when was the last time Stanford came into Austin? Houston's different. When was the last time they went into Austin and beat Texas head-to-head for a kid? I get it. I get it, man. I know why they would be hesitant. But look, Elijah Higgins does an in-home with the Longhorns late last week. I think, you know, one of the things that I always say about kids in recruiting is that if it's an out-of-state situation, the recruitment doesn't begin until about 72 hours before signing day. So right at this moment, right now. And that's where Mama, who I use her as the example. Sometimes it could be Dad, but for the most part, it's Mama. Mama, all year long, has braced herself for the idea of her son going away to college to a place where she just won't see him very much. A couple of times during the season, for a person who birthed a kid. Like, I see this now with my kids. Like, my wife, I get it, man. That kid came out of his mother. So, and that mother had that kid in her belly. 72 hours before he's going to put pen to paper, the reality of, I'm not going to see my son, who I have seen almost every day of his life. I'm not going to see him but a couple of times over the course of the next year. Moms freak out. Moms freak out, and deservedly so. So at some point in the last 72 hours of a recruitment, a mom, when there's an out of, they'll sit down, and it's usually over the dinner table, because I've heard these stories a million times. Usually it's over the dinner table, and usually it's some very passive-aggressive stuff. You know, it's like mom is sitting at the table, and they're all eating, and she's made a really good meal because she really wants to make sure her son understands where she's coming from. And that's when she drops the whole, are you really going to leave me? Are you really going to leave me? Because I love you. I am not coping well with the idea of losing you. And some kids, man, they're cool. Some kids hear that and they're like, Mom, I got to get away from home. It's a business decision. This is where I need to be. And some kids, man, they can't handle that. They can't handle mom's tears. And I don't know what's going on in Elijah Higgins' world right now. That might not be existent. I know this. He's got a chance to stay home and go to college. He's got a chance to stay home, and his mom can see him every day if she wanted to, which would probably be a turnoff for Elijah Higgins. Nobody gets to college and wants their mom to be around every day. But that home-cooked meal, the laundry, seeing the family on the weekends, you know, take away the names and just look at the situation, and Elijah Higgins fits the mold of a kid who, in the last 72 hours of the decision-making process, has a lot to think about. And I think, weirdly enough, maybe Elijah Higgins is the wide receiver with the most upside that the Longhorns have the best chance at right now, because Texas probably has suddenly a surging chance to get a kid like that when it seemed like he was just out of the picture. Brew McCoy's at home doing the same thing with USC and his mom. Are you really going to leave me? Because I can come see you all the time if you're an hour away. If you are a three-hour plane ride away, everything's different. Stanford education or not. And in general, those are the remaining kids that everybody's going to be sitting out waiting for their decisions to be made. Look, we'll do more of this big picture stuff on Wednesday, where we'll do a bunch of podcasts over the course of this week related to signing day. But I wrote about this over at 10 Thoughts from the Weekend on my column over at orangebloods.com. I think that, you know, when we talk about this recruiting class, and this is going to be a little bit of a late, quick-hitting, last parting shot for me to drop this little stink bomb in. Texas has an out-of-state recruiting class. It's probably the best in terms of volume. If it's just in terms of volume, it's the best that the Longhorns have ever had. If we're talking quality, I wouldn't go that far. I would probably point to 1999 when Texas was able to get a Chris Sims. Texas was able to get a kid like Bo Scaife. Texas, their recruiting efforts from an out-of-town standpoint, you know, even going back to the Makovic classes with the work that they did in the state of California and getting some truly elite-level kids. But nobody's ever attacked a recruiting class in the state. Well, at Texas, with out-of-state kids, the way Tom Herman and his staff have done so far this year, almost all of the quality is from out-of-state kids. It's without it, this would be the worst recruiting class I have ever seen in the history of Texas Longhorn football recruiting if there weren't out-of-state kids. The flip side of that is, this is, in Tom Herman's second year, the worst in-state recruiting haul I have ever seen a Texas football program land in my 25 years of covering Texas high school football recruiting on a professional level. Texas has two of the top 10 kids in the state. And Texas also has two of the top 30 kids in the state. And what really matters are those is that top 15. Texas got two. We could debate kids that are ranked between 16 and 50 all day long. No, he shouldn't be 41. I'd have him in the top 25. It's the same. I'm going to keep repeating this over and over and over again until you guys come around with me on this. It's the same. But man, you have got to clean up at the top of the board in the state of Texas. That's where it's at. If you can get six top 15 kids and you don't get, you know, any other kids in the top 50, whatever, you got six in the top 15. That's where you need to be. What made Mack Brown such an amazing recruiter is that every year you would look at a Texas top 10 list and Texas would have five, six, seven. In some years, in a few years, eight. Texas has two. And it doesn't get much better outside of that. It is not. Tom Herman and his staff got their ass kicked in Texas. And you can try to put a ribbon and bow on that pig all you want to, but that's still shit coming out. It's still a pig. This is still an in-state recruiting class, not good enough. And saved by the out-of-state kids. And I don't know completely how to react to what's happening. I know it needs to be acknowledged. I know that in five recruiting years as being a head coach, Tom Herman signed eight kids from the Metroplex. Six that he actually recruited. Two of those eight were kids already committed that just stuck with Tom Herman, one at Houston and one at Texas. Six kids in five classes. He basically once a year gets a kid from the Metroplex. And this was a year when the Metroplex had a lot of talent and Texas got essentially shut out. So, all in all, it's a solid class. It's not elite. I know that, like, in the rivals rankings, they're ranked seventh. I'm not even looking at team rankings right now. I'm just looking at the recruiting class. And the recruiting class isn't good enough in terms of in-state talent, and I don't know that Texas did enough at its most critical needs. Defensive line. This was a year you had to get DeMarvin Leal. And they didn't. They're not. This is, you know, they've somewhat aided their linebacker needs by going out of state. It wasn't a year where there were a lot of linebacker choices in state. But, you know, it's, you know, the offensive line. Tyler Johnson's one of my favorite kids in the entire state. He's one of those two of the top 10 kids in the state that Texas is able to pull in. Texas needed three Tyler Johnsons, not one. They need three kids of that ilk. And that's what Georgia does. That's what Alabama does. That's what Ohio State in their best recruiting years, that's what they do. If Texas is going to recruit year in and year out top five classes, you've got to be able to do that at the positions of need, not just at wide receiver or defensive back. A few quick NFL thoughts. I'm looking at the clock. Time's kind of got away from me. Maybe I'll do another podcast tomorrow just to vent a little bit. But that Cowboys game yesterday, come on, man. What was that? That was so bad. That was so bad that I didn't get mad. Not one piece of me yesterday. I just was like, chalk that up to the game. Shut out for the first time since that 12-0 game against the Patriots back in, what, 2003? Yeah, just burn the film, move on. Dallas's magic number to win the division is one. And they're not going to catch the Bears. So win a game, and win Sunday, right? Clinch the division. And then I think you give your guys a bunch. I think you give them the final game off. Dallas needs to win once in the last 2 weeks. If that, in theory, although Philadelphia lost. Look, their magic number is one. Their magic number is one. So I'm not tripping about the Colts. That's done with. It was ugly. It was revealing. But look, man, Dallas had won five in a row against some really good competition over that stretch. They had a loss coming. And boy, did it come. They're going to be the four seed. They're going to take on the number one wild card in the NFC, which is almost certainly going to be Seattle, I think. I guess it might not be Seattle, but it looks like it's going to be Seattle. And I think that you just got to win one more game. Win this next upcoming weekend. Use that last week for rest. Give yourself a bye of sorts. And get ready knowing that, look, man, you're going to have to win three games in a row to get to the Super Bowl, and two of them are going to be on the road. So in a weird way, yesterday was completely meaningless for Dallas, unless they just barf on themselves in these final 2 weeks. But, you know, I think they'll find a way to win a game at home. I think that they're going to be okay in terms of winning the division and getting into the playoffs. What happens from there? Like a shoulder shrug. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to say. I don't have high expectations. Because almost certainly, if they win their first wild card game, their second wild card game is probably going to be in New Orleans. And while they dominated the shit out of New Orleans and Dallas, I wonder what that looks like in a rematch when New Orleans has had some time to think about it and doesn't make the mistakes that they made a couple of weeks ago. But hey, maybe Dallas gets through that, and then there's another road game. maybe the Cowboys can get to the Super Bowl, because the NFC as a whole down the stretch looks like a conference with a bunch of pretenders and not a lot of contenders. And the Bears might be the best team in the NFC, and I don't know that they're that good. Great on defense. One last NFL thought before I go. Puna Ford. Dude, I'm tipping my proverbial cap to you right now. Starting as a rookie in the NFL, undrafted, sub-6 foot, and just kicking ass and taking names. I think Puna Ford's the best sub-6 foot defensive lineman in the NFL right now, because I don't think there are that many. That guy probably should have been a first-round draft pick, and he went undrafted. And every team in the league right now is looking at that dude, thinking, asking their scout, or asking themselves, why didn't we listen to our scouting department? They said we should have taken a flyer on him, but we didn't want to draft some defensive lineman. It was sub-6 foot. I get it, but that dude's a player. And what's really interesting about what he's doing in Seattle, he's not just clogging run gaps. What they do, what they've done in Seattle is turn him loose in a way that I don't even think the Longhorns did with him. He is shooting gaps, making plays in the backfield, generally being disrupted on a play-by-play basis. Hey, man. Puna Ford, in a lot of weird ways, has emerged as one of the best former Longhorns in the NFL in 2018. And I find that to be shocking. Not because he wasn't good at Texas, but he went undrafted because they thought he was tiny. And now he's a big-ass problem and not a tiny one for every NFL team he seems to be playing with the Seahawks. Wouldn't it be interesting if Seattle plays Dallas in the first round of the playoffs and Longhorn fans who are Cowboy fans are watching Puna Ford and really upset that he won't just go away for a game. Anyway, that's it for today's Orange Bloods podcast. Stay tuned all week here on the Yak for more podcasts. It's National Signing Day week, which means we better have badass content this week. This is the week when we should have it.